WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Monday. That's right, the weekend is in the books. It certainly flew by, at least for me. But we are back in the saddle right here on WKAR AM 870 with a great show in store for all of you out there. Of course, we will recap the weekend that was concerning the Detroit Tigers. It's getting really bad, folks. The Tigers are right now on a 6-game losing streak. What went wrong for the Tigers at home against the Texas Rangers over the weekend? We will chat about that in just a second. Don't go anywhere. Also, there is a new horse in town that is just really taking the horse racing world by storm. His name is Nyquist. Pretty interesting tie with that horse concerning the Detroit Red Wings, which we'll get to hear about in just a second. But Nyquist won the Kentucky Derby. So we'll chat about that as well. We will also invite really just Michigan sports royalty. She is actually the winningest softball coach in NCAA history, folks. Her name is Carol Hutchins. She is the head coach of the Michigan softball team, and the Michigan softball team had a tremendous weekend as the regular season comes to a close and the postseason awaits. So Carol will be joining us via phone later on in the show. And also on the back end of today's Current Sports, we will chat about the EMU athletic situation, and also we will bring you weekend winners. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, May 9th. All right, we start with Bobby Wilson's Grand Slam. Yeah, highlighting a 7-run eighth inning for the Texas Rangers in an 8-3 comeback dub over the Detroit Tigers, completing the series sweep at Comerica Park. Justin Verlander, he was fantastic. He threw 7 scoreless innings for the Tigers, but within 5 batters in the eighth, the bullpen allowed the Rangers to tie the game. The loss was Detroit's 6th in a row. The Tigers head to the nation's capital for a 3-game interleague series with the Washington Nationals beginning tonight. Annabelle Sanchez will take the mound for Detroit. Sanchez is 3-3 on the year with a 5.87 ERA. Ugh. All right, Nyquist, ridden by a record-setting Mario Gutierrez, won the 142nd running of the Kentucky Derby on Saturday at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. Nyquist, a 2-1 favorite, now undefeated in 8 starts, grabbed the lead down the home stretch and held off Exaggerator to win by 1 1/4 lengths. The official winning time for the 1 1/4 mile race was 2:01:31. That was almost 2 seconds faster than Triple Crown winner American Pharoah's time last year. More on the Kentucky Derby in the blink of an eye. All right, the 24th ranked Michigan State baseball team got a career long outing from starter Joe Mockbee en route to a 4-2 victory over Nebraska Sunday afternoon at McLane Stadium to even the weekend series between the teams. Now, 4 different Spartans recorded RBIs, while freshman Marty Bacina, he went 4-for-4 as MSU upped its record to 31-12 and 11-6 in the Big Ten Conference. The two teams will complete the series today in exactly 1 minute, 1:05 p.m. to be exact. All right, Christina Zelowski, she tossed a 4-hit shutout as Michigan State earned a 6-0 victory over Ohio State on Friday night in Columbus, Ohio. The Spartans secured a spot in the Big Ten tournament next week, this week with the victory, and won for the 4th time in the last 5 games. Now, the Spartans would fall on Saturday, but went on to win the 3-game set with a 9-7 win over OSU yesterday in the regular season finale for both teams. With its 11-1 5-inning victory over Rutgers on Saturday afternoon, the Michigan softball team secured the outright Big Ten championship and the number one seed in the upcoming Big Ten tournament. The Wolverines earned the 20th conference championship in program history, and get this, 9th consecutive title. Are you kidding me? The team overall is just 43-4, 20-2 in the Big Ten Conference. Carol Hutchins, again, head coach of that Michigan softball team, will be joining me on the air later on this hour. You do not want to miss this chat, because Carol not only has been the longtime coach of the Michigan softball program, but she has interesting ties right here to East Lansing at Michigan State University. All right, with a final round of 300, the Michigan Wolverines golf team, women's golf team, tallied a program record 9-16 NCAA regional total to finish 6th and advance to the NCAA Finals in Eugene, Oregon. U of M advances to the NCAA Finals for the first, just the second time in program history. U of M's only other trip to the championships was 14 years ago in 2002 at Washington National in Auburn, Washington. All right, folks, well, the Okemos High School varsity girls basketball program has a new hire. That's right, the new head coach is Kristen Rasmussen, a 1996 graduate of Okemos High and a 2000 graduate of Michigan State University. Now, Rasmussen was a 3-time captain at MSU before being selected in the 2000 WNBA draft. Rasmussen played 11 seasons of professional basketball, primarily in the WNBA. Now, she brings coaching experience from Western State Colorado University and Simmons College. Now, Rasmussen is also a member of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame and the Okemos High School Athletic Hall of Fame, and will be transitioning back to Okemos from the Boston area in the coming week. So congratulations to Ira Childress and Okemos High School hiring Kristen Rasmussen as its next varsity girls basketball coach. And last but certainly not least, Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry will be named as the NBA's most valuable player for a second straight season, according to league sources. Now, sources told ESPN.com that the widely anticipated honor for Curry is scheduled to be announced in the next few days, with the Warriors poised to return to Oakland, California tomorrow after tonight's Game 4 in Portland. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those headliners or anything on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it live here on the airwaves, or you can even tweet me at @AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, let's start the show.
At this point, with 6 straight losses, everybody's looking for answers. What can a manager do at this point to help turn things around?
Well, the first thing you got to do is stay positive, and you come back the next day and forget about yesterday. Like last time, when we went through a losing spell, it just takes one hit or one game, and it turned us around. You know, we won that first game against Oakland, and we win 6 out of 7. The same thing applies now. When something's got to click, something's got to go well, something's got to go our way, there's got to be a big hit or a big player, something that causes us to win a game, and you hope it snowballs into something. You get good energy going, you feel good about yourself, you feel like positive things are going to happen.
Did you talk about that, but how difficult is that to do to stay positive?
Well, you learn in baseball to put things in the rearview mirror. You can't control what happened today. We haven't liked what happened last week. We can't do anything about it now. It's part of our record. We'll move on. go to Washington, we'll play them.
And he's next to Gunrunner. And then it's a four-length gap back to Destin, who has rallied into third. Bohaven is coming on two. And they're into the stretch. And it's Nyquist. Nyquist has taken the lead on the outside. Gunrunner, second at the rail. 5 lengths back to Destin in third. And they come to the final furlong. Exaggerator is closing in. Nyquist to catch with a 16th to go. Gunrunner, Exaggerator on the outside. Nyquist and Exaggerator. They're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome to the show, ladies and gents, boys and girls. I am your host, Al Martin. And once again, happy, happy Monday. I really hope that you guys had a great Mother's Day weekend. I mean, I was in East Lansing. Didn't get a chance. This is the first year, I think, ever. I've never not spent time with my mom because my mom, of course, she's moved out in Miami now, and she was out there for Mother's Day, and I was, of course, up here still working, and I didn't get a chance to see her this Mother's Day weekend. So I made sure, though, to give her a call, and, you know, she got her present via mail, so that was nice. But I really hope and trust that all of you out there got a chance to celebrate with your moms and family and friends, and trust that it was a fantastic weekend. It was a busy weekend in the world of sports, as you just heard. As, again, the Kentucky Derby taking place, in which Nyquist, yeah, he's the new horse on the block, folks. And get this, the horse, Nyquist, is undefeated right now. Undefeated. It's really remarkable what this horse has done. I mean, Nyquist hasn't lost since, what, ever. He hasn't lost ever. And looking at his major wins here, you know, I'm looking at a few races here dating back to last year. The Best Pal Stakes won that. The Del Mar Futurity, he won that. The Front Runner Stakes won that. Breeders' Cup Juvenile won that. St. Vincent Stakes, that took place this year, won that. The Florida Derby won that. And now he has won the Kentucky Derby. Pretty impressive stuff, folks. Pretty impressive stuff. And, you know, when looking at it, again, he's undefeated right now. Nyquist doesn't know what the word lose means. And the horse is the first undefeated winner of the Kentucky Derby since Bic Brown back in 2008. Pretty impressive stuff. And again, I want to start with the Kentucky Derby. We'll get to the Detroit Tigers. Again, this is a team that is reeling, to say the least. 6 straight losses for the Detroit Tigers. And it's so crazy because I was on Current State this morning, as I am just about every Monday now. And, you know, Mark and I, we joked how a week from today, you know, if you look at last week on Monday, I was singing a different tune about the Detroit Tigers team. They had 1-5 straight. They look to be getting things back on the right track. But now that is all going out the window. The game of baseball, folks, I tell you, it is a long season. So we'll get to the Tigers in just a second. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, you know, talking about the Kentucky Derby, so when I was watching the broadcast, I saw that it was announced that the attendance in Kentucky for this year's Derby was the second highest ever, only second to, of course, last year's Kentucky Derby, which of course started American Pharoah's incredible run to become a Triple Crown winner, the first Triple Crown winner since 1978. And, you know, when really looking at this race, I mean, first off, it's pretty cool that, you know, Nyquist is named after Detroit Red Wings forward Gustav Nyquist, because the owner, Paul Redham, of Redham Racing, is a huge hockey fan and a diehard Detroit Red Wings fan. So very cool, Ty. And you know, right now, Nyquist, he's overseas right now preparing for the U.S., the World Games right now. And you know, he was watching the race, and he sent out a tweet. And also the Detroit Red Wings, their official Twitter account, sent out a tweet congratulating Nyquist. So that was very, very cool. Very cool stuff. And, you know, you really evaluate this from the standpoint of it, because, you know, looking at Nyquist getting the dub, I was very curious to look at the coverage surrounded around which horse was the favorite coming into the Kentucky Derby. And it was Nyquist. At 2-1, as a 2-1 favorite, he was the guy that everyone expected to win. But at the same time, we didn't see the same chatter that we saw last year with American Pharoah, because I just feel like, okay, American Pharoah is the latest horse to win the Triple Crown, the coveted Triple Crown, which is so hard to do. And we have been waiting since 1978 to see a Triple Crown winner that I think this year, coming off that incredible year by you know, American Pharoah, this year, I don't think a lot of people expect another horse to do what we saw last season. It's just such an incredible feat. But, you know, I mentioned this morning as well on Current State. You know, I sound contradictory when I make the statement, because when you look at this stat right here, if you look at the last Triple Crown winner prior to American Pharoah, that, of course, was Affirmed back in 1978. If you remember, the year prior to 1978, there was another Triple Crown winner in Seattle, SLU. So we saw back-to-back years in 1977 and 1978 where there was a horse that won the Triple Crown feat. And that's unheard of, folks. I don't know if that'll ever happen again. The odds of that are pretty remarkable, pretty insane. So I just think that when coming into this race, I thought that a lot of people had the perception like, okay, there's no way a horse can do that again this year. We'll watch it. We'll enjoy it. It's the Kentucky Derby. It's a great sports spectacle, but we're not expecting this winner to go off and win the Preakness and the Belmont and to complete another Triple Crown feat. So, but it's crazy how that dialogue has kind of changed now. After Nyquist crossed that finish line as the favorite, and again, when looking at this horse's incredible resume, 8-0 right now, has never lost. Again, first undefeated winner of the Kentucky Derby since Big Brown in 2008. There are a lot of people out there that are slowly but surely buying the hype. So I don't know. And I think it's way too early to say that Nyquist would do that. He's a great horse, and we saw him put on a show. He completely put on a show this past weekend. But another year, back-to-back years, where we see another Triple Crown winner. I just can't even wrap my head around that right now. So I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Kassin, to the show. Isaac, how you doing, man? How was your weekend?
Doing well, you know. I had a lot of moving to do with the end of the school year, so have a new apartment right now, and got the chance to sit down and watch quite a few sports events as well. So none better than the Kentucky Derby. Of course, my favorite part of that is not the horse racing itself. I'm not quite the maven of horse racing or anything like that. I love looking at the people in the stands. That's my favorite part of it.
So you like people watching at the Kentucky Derby, yeah.
Oh, the hats, well, it's crazy. Classic, yeah.
Right, the hats and you know, these big wigs throwing around money and betting. It really is quite the show away from the show, if you will, other than the race. So, but yeah, I mean, when looking at Nyquist, though, do you think we have another Triple Crown winner here? I don't know.
No.
It's so early.
No, every single year since the Triple Crown in 1978, correct?
Well, that was the last Triple Crown winner prior to American Pharoah, affirmed back in 1978. Yeah.
But every time between them, that and American Pharoah,
right,
we've been saying, is this the Triple Crown winner? And it didn't happen until American Pharoah. So, no, I'm pumping the brakes here. And just like everybody else, they wanted to see a Triple Crown winner in their lifetime. They have with American Pharoah. Let's see if Nyquist can win the Preakness first, and then we'll consider a Triple Crown. But not just yet. Hold on to your horses in all literal definitions.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. But, he's a very impressive horse. And I love the tie that, you know, Nyquist, his name has to Detroit Red Wings forward, you know, Gustav Nyquist. I think that's very, very cool. And again, it speaks to the hockey fandom that owner Paul Redham has. So we'll see. It'll be a very cool local story here, I tell you that. And I, you know, Nyquist being overseas preparing for international hockey play, you know, he hasn't, I believe he hasn't made a comment on camera about the horse Nyquist, but I will be very curious to see what he has to say if this horse keeps on winning. Folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call in if you want to be a part of today's show. Again, in about 10 minutes, we will invite the winningest head coach in the world of college softball. Carol Hutchins will be joining me. You do not want to miss that chat. But in the meantime, let's talk some pro baseball. Oh, boy, the Detroit Tigers. It was a rough, rough weekend, to say the least, for Detroit Tigers fans out there, culminating with a series loss to the Texas Rangers. Sunday was the final game of that series, 8-3, the final of that matchup at Comerica Park. And things were going smooth. I caught that game. I watched that game right up until I hit the movies. And I'm sitting there watching, and I'm saying, whoa, Justin Verlander looks like the Justin Verlander of old. JV had an absolutely fantastic outing. His best start all season, folks. He allowed 3 hits over 7 scoreless innings and struck out 9 batters. Very impressive stuff. And not only that, but JV also made a bit of history on Sunday. He moved past Jack Morris into sole possession of second place on the Tigers' all-time strikeouts list. How impressive is that? Doing it while Prince Fielder, former Detroit Tiger, was at bat. He struck out Prince and got the second place name on that all-time list. Now, of course, the number one guy who holds the all-time strikeout record for the Tigers is Mickey Loomis. He's the all-time leader. And I think it's just a testament, though. When looking at JV's career as a Tiger, it's just a testament to just how consistent he has been relatively throughout most of his career. But, it was a gem. JV went out there and was so dialed in. He was so calm. He was so focused. It was absolutely fantastic. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, it's a 2-0 ball game. JV's got this in command. The bullpen has been playing relatively well, with the exception of coming into this weekend series. I thought they were just going to close out things. 2 innings left, game over, kaput. But I'm getting dressed, and what do I hear in the living room by the announcers? You know, Rod Allen and Mario Mpemba. I heard them just in utter just awe. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, what's going on here? And I walk into the living room, and the score has completely turned around in favor of the Texas Rangers. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, what in the world happened from the moment I left my couch to go take a shower to the point I got out and I'm getting dressed? What just happened here? And then, thank goodness for DVR, I rewound it my television and found that the Tigers blew the 2-0 lead after bringing in and going to their bullpen and bringing in Justin Wilson and Mark Lowe in the 8th. And that was it. 7 runs in the 8th inning is what the Detroit Tigers gave up. And the Texas Rangers just coasted from there. And how ironic is it that Bobby Wilson, who was a Detroit Tiger not too long ago, if you remember, that Bobby Wilson was the man that really blew this game open, hitting a grand slam to put the Rangers on top. Bobby Wilson, I remember calling his name here on the show, saying, yeah, the Tigers have Bobby Wilson with the squad, and, you know, now he's signed with the Rangers, and I'm sitting there saying, what? Are you kidding me? You couldn't have written a story better than that. And also, want to call out Francisco Rodriguez. He gave up a run in the 9th as well. So, when evaluating the situation, the Detroit Tigers have now lost 6 straight games, dating back to May 3rd, which was the start of that series against the Cleveland Indians, a road series matchup. And again, they got swept by Cleveland on the road. Then they came home this weekend. They get swept by the Texas Rangers at Comerica Park. And now they will hit the road to play the Washington Nationals in interleague play. And a lot of people hate interleague play in the MLB, but now they have an interleague matchup against the Washington Nats starting tonight. And, you know, I went on social media later on that night, and also this morning I saw it a lot, and I saw Drew Sharp of the Detroit Free Press commenting on this as well, whether or not Brad Ausmus will make it through the year without being fired. Brad Ausmus is the three-year manager of this team. But I really think that's really the cop-out discussion when having a conversation about what currently is wrong with the Detroit Tigers. Bringing in Justin Wilson and Mark Lowe late in that game yesterday was not a mistake at all. At all. It was the right move. It was the right move. JV had gone long enough. It was a 2-0 lead. You should be able to trust your bullpen to come into a situation like that and to shut the door. That wasn't the fault of Brad Ausmus. And I think that, again, and we've had this conversation when it comes to the blame in the sports world. And I've made it known countless times that managers and head coaches get way too much of the blame. The players have to take more responsibility. And the Detroit Tigers, as a roster, have to take more responsibility for what's going on wrong currently with this franchise. Hitting. Let's talk about the hitting yesterday. JD Martinez. He goes up to bat and goes 0-for-4. How about Anthony Gose? He struck out. Not one, not two, but three times. How about Victor Martinez and Justin Upton, who went hitless? Hitless, folks. That entire game. That's not the responsibility of Brad Ausmus. That's just a player going out there and mucking it up. That's exactly what that is, folks. That is not the fault of Brad Ausmus. And I must say, when you evaluate this batting lineup, which is so stout, when you look at it on paper, it's like, wow. They're loaded. They're absolutely loaded. But they have been relatively inconsistent throughout this year so far. And it's another thing. It's so early on in the year, folks. You play 162-plus games in an MLB season. Yet already we have people jumping off ship. And I get it. We're very reactionary in the sporting world. But you have people jumping off the ship and saying, hey, Brad Ausmus needs to go. I get it. It's frustration. It's pent-up frustration with the squad that when you look at it on paper, should be competing for a World Series. We've talked about that. But it's so early, folks. It is so early to completely implode on this team. But at the end of the day, you know, I just refuse to believe that when looking at the hitting for this team and how relatively inconsistent it has been throughout this year so far for the Tigers, I refuse to believe that they will continue to be in this funk. The batting and the hitting is going to get better. The hitting is going to get better, folks. What I'm more concerned about is with who's on that mound. The starting pitching, with the exception of what Justin Verlander did yesterday, the starting pitching has not been great. Jordan Zimmermann has been the only shining light. And the bullpen, we've seen the bullpen at times play absolutely fantastic, you know, dialing the clock back to last week. The bullpen didn't allow a run all weekend. All of last weekend it didn't. And, you know, we have what we have yesterday. So it's been a bit up and down. So I'm just concerned about, you know, how the Tigers start games. Who comes out there as a starting pitcher and who can really get it going right now? Because, you know, and I mentioned last week about the starting pitching for the Tigers and how many of those respective starters have ERAs that are over 5. That can't happen. That can't happen. So now they play an interleague play against the Washington Nationals. The Nets, this could be a dangerous series as well because the Nets are a team that have lost 4 straight to Chicago Cubs and are looking to get back in the win column right now. They are playing in desperation mode as well. They are trying to get some form of consistency as well. So that's going to be an interesting series. It's going to be no walk in the park at all. In evaluating the American League Central, the Detroit Tigers right now are 2nd from last, only to the Minnesota Twins. The Minnesota Twins are 8-23 overall. The Tigers are 14-16, so below 500. The Kansas City Royals are at the 500 mark at 15-15. The Cleveland Indians are 15-13. And the Chicago White Sox, 22-10. Boy, oh boy, have I been off on my predictions so far for the Detroit Tigers. When we had our season predictions for the Detroit Tigers, I had mentioned how the White Sox and the Cleveland Indians had gotten better in the offseason and how everyone is still chasing the Kansas City Royals. But that's not the case right now. The Royals at 15-15. Now again, it's still so early. Just 30 games into the season. You know, it's hard to make hard assumptions right now, but man, oh man, mad props to the Chicago White Sox. 22-10 overall right now, and they have won 3 straight games. Isaac, what do you think about this Detroit Tigers team? Because, you know, it's one that no one can read right now. And it's one of those things that when I look at this squad and how they've played so far, I say to myself that there's got to be a shakeup to really wake these guys up. And I really think that you really get into the danger zone when you talk about the hitting for this team, because when you are in a hitting drought, like some of these Detroit Tigers players are, you start to think too much while you're at the plate. You know what I mean? You're just sitting there saying, okay, what is going wrong? And maybe I need to tweak this. Maybe I need a different bet. I really think that you can get caught up in thinking way too much instead of just sitting back, relaxing, and doing what you do. How do the Tigers get back on track here?
There's no easy answer, because it's not as if there's one addressable problem. Once he gets back from an injury, we should be set. That's not the case right now. For the Tigers, you see all different parts collapse at different times. In this 6-game skid, they haven't scored more than 5 runs. Mm-hmm. And when they've scored more than 5, or when they've scored 5 runs, the pitching hasn't been good to keep up with it. So every single thing just gives out at the most inopportune time. And that's actually what happened last season for the Tigers too. I'd like to see just the Tigers putting games to bed, because last night was the most conspicuous example of this. And everybody's harping on the bullpen, but the Tigers are up 2-0 once JV exits. What happened after that? They should have been able to kill that game off, not give the Rangers even a door open for them to be able to fathom a comeback. And yet that's what happened. So the Tigers just need to get some momentum going. Like you mentioned, 30 games into the season, not lost whatsoever. At the same time, it's not boding well for a team who seemed to make great offseason moves. And most, except for Jordan Zimmermann, who's been spectacular, most of those moves have not panned out just yet.
And I don't know, again, and Justin Verlander, even though he was fantastic yesterday, I don't know if he can continue that. I don't know. Yeah. It may have been a diamond in the rough game for him. We'll see. We'll see. Folks, what do you think about the Detroit Tigers? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. We'll take a brief first break and come back and talk with the head coach of the Michigan Wolverine softball team, Carroll Hutchins. That and more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Let's rewind the clock to April 2nd of this year. Yes, it was the day after April Fool's, and the jokes were completely out the window for the Michigan softball team. That's right, all business, as they were in the midst of a 3-game road series against Indiana University. Now, it had beaten Indiana in game 1, 11-5, the final, and things were certainly clicking in game 2. The Wolverines would mercy the Hoosiers in 5 innings, 8-0. But this wasn't an ordinary dub for this stout program. No, it propelled head coach Carroll Hutchins into softball lore, making her the winningest softball coach in NCAA history.
It's not about me, because I never won a game at Michigan. I actually played at a different Big Ten school. It's about Michigan women who come every day to play for Michigan. That's what this is about every day. And you guys represent this institution like every woman who's ever worn the maize and blue. That's all I ever want. It's the only joy I ever get is all the women that wear the maize and blue, because we're Michigan women forever. So, way to go.
Yes, it was win number 1,458 for Hutchins, who has spent the last 32 seasons at the helm of the Wolverines program. But get this, she has a little green in her too, seeing as though she played for the Michigan State softball and basketball programs from 1976 to 1979. This past weekend, Hutchins and her Wolverines captured their ninth straight, yes, ninth straight Big Ten regular season championship, and she now joins us right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Carol Hutchins, welcome to the show. Carol, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it is certainly a pleasure. Now, Carol, first off, what goes through your noggin when you think of being the all-time winningest coach? Because you've had some time to really let that accomplishment digest a bit.
You know, I just know that I get to wake up every day and be the head softball coach at the University of Michigan. And it's one of the finest institutions in the world. And I get to be a part of a group of people that get to represent Michigan every day. And I really don't make much more of it than that. I've been here a long time. I've had a lot of really great people, players, staff, coaches, support people. This is a group effort, and I'm certainly just a part of it. And I'm just really grateful for every opportunity that I've had in my life.
Did you ever think that you'd be at Michigan this long, Carol?
No, I have to tell you, I came down here in, I actually came in 1982 to be the assistant coach for Bob DeCarolis. And I've told Bob this. I said, I really thought I'd probably just be here a few years and go somewhere else as coaches tend to, you know, move around. And he asked me, he goes, well, where'd you think you were going to go? I said, well, I didn't know. I was just playing it one day at a time, 1 year at a time. But I could have never envisioned any of this. To be honest, I couldn't have envisioned 32 years here. I couldn't have envisioned million-dollar stadiums and ESPN, and it goes on and on. What women's softball has evolved into, we are definitely a class sport, one of the finest in the NCAA.
Now, Carol, going back to that time back in 1982, where you became an assistant for the Michigan softball program, how did you become an assistant with the program? Can you kind of take us through that?
Well, honestly, there was a job opening down here, and I applied for it. I had finished up at Michigan State. I stayed there to work for first-year head coach Gloria Bexford, who was actually a softball buddy of mine. We played together for years. And after that, I went to Indiana and did my graduate work and was a graduate assistant to the legendary Gail Blevins, who later moved on to Iowa. And then I took an interim position at Ferris State College up in Big Rapids. Mm-hmm. And Kathy DeBoer, who's a Michigan State great, former volleyball and basketball great, she was the volleyball coach as well as the senior women's administrator. She called me up and she noted that I needed a job and said their head coach, Monica Folke, was pregnant. Could I come up and take the team? And I lived there for 6 months. Quite frankly, I lived on her living room floor. So that's
really?
How it was back then.
Oh, boy, that's called dedication, Carol. Now, I got to know, because when you look at, your tenure playing here at Michigan State, again, you play Michigan State softball and basketball 1976 to 1979. Did you receive a ton of backlash from Spartans you knew when you became a coach out in Ann Arbor? What was that transition like fandom-wise for you?
Well, it was so long ago, it's really hard to remember. I didn't think twice about it. To me, it was a great opportunity to go to a program that wanted me to be a part of it, and I knew it was a great institution. And there's no question some of my softball buddies and basketball buddies, they gave me a hard time about it, but along the way, they've been very supportive of me overall, and they always root for the Spartans, but after that, they've given me a lot of love and support, so I never made too much of all the rivalry. To me, I've had great opportunity. It started at Michigan State. I had a great experience there. I loved my career at Michigan State. And I've certainly had great opportunity over here in Ann Arbor.
Now, I got to know, Carol, if you're sitting down watching, you know, college football and Michigan State is playing Michigan, who are you rooting for?
Well, there's not a question these days. I am very blue, and I root for Michigan always.
Okay.
But when Michigan State is not playing Michigan, I often root for Michigan State. I am a huge, especially a huge Tom Izzo fan. Tom Izzo is one of my all-time heroes, and I always root for Michigan State, of course, unless they're playing Michigan.
And, you know, that's a great segue into my next question, Kara. I'm wondering, how close are you with the coaches here at Michigan State? Have you had conversations with Izzo over time? Do you guys have a relationship at all?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say we have a relationship as in we're good friends by any means. I've had the opportunity to meet him on a couple of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, he gave me a call one day. And this was something that occurred in our program. We had a recruit's father go into cardiac arrest. And myself and my coaching staff had to, we had been trained in CPR, and we had to revive him. And we had used an AED, and fortunately we were trained in that. And the father survived. Well, Tom Izzo got wind of it, and I got a call one day, and the voice on the other end said, "Do you have a minute? Coach Tom Izzo's on the line for you." And I was just delighted. He was so excited about, you know, the fact that we had saved this guy's life. And he was very complimentary. He knew about our program. He knew of our success. He mm-hmm. said, "What's next for you?" And it was right before regionals that year. I'm just a huge fan. I think he is just not just an awesome coach, but I know what a great ambassador he is for Michigan State and, you know, for the state of Michigan and for all of college sports. So I would welcome any day to be in his circle.
Carol, that is a remarkable story. So, did you perform the CPR?
Well, it was the three of us. I did the CPR pumps, and my smart assistant Jen Brundy put the AED, onto the gentleman, and it was a group effort. Trust me, it was pretty intense.
Oh boy, you're like Superwoman, Carol. I tell you, you just never stop. Oh, folks, if you're just now joining us here.
We're fortunate that we were trained in that. I have
yes.
to say that we're very fortunate that we had some semblance of knowing what to do, or he would have died.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the head coach of the Michigan Wolverine softball team, Carol Hutchins. Now, Carol, I mean, ninth straight Big Ten regular season championship, 17th overall. You've won a Women's College World Series championship, 9 Big Ten tournament championships, 17 NCAA regional championships. I mean, what do you attest to that success over time?
Well, more than anything, good people, good players. It starts with my staff, and I've had a long time coaching staff, both of them, but Bonnie Thole has came back to Michigan. She was an all-Big Ten player for Michigan back in the late 80s, early 90s. And she came back in 94, and in 95, we made our first College World Series. And we've been clicking ever since at that level. She's my recruiting coordinator. She finds us just fantastic talent. And, of course, Jen Brundage is my longtime pitching coach, who's a UCLA grad and an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
And then the kind of kids we get great women who understand that this is about the team, and they know how to be team players. They put the team first. Those are lessons they learn here, and they learn them in life. And we've really been consistent, probably more so than any reason. We've got a consistent staff. We don't have turnover, and we've got really high-quality people on both the coaching staff and the players.
Carol, what's the most stressful part about trying to stay on top of that mountaintop?
Well, I think I don't really worry about staying on top because every year to me is a new year. We're trying to get to the top every year. Every year is a new team. This is team 39, the 39th team in the history of Michigan softball.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care what team 38 did. Team 38, as you know, We were runner-up in the College World Series, number two in the country.
Right.
But what's Team 39 going to accomplish? So I'm not caught up in all the how many things we've won and what we've done in the past. I only care about now. And we're working hard this year to have a good season. And I would say so far, so good.
And, Carol, you mentioned the recruiting trail. And I'm pretty sure that, again, you know, mentioning that success of your program in recent years, I'm sure that when you walk into the home of a potential recruit, the program pretty much sells itself. Is that right?
Well, you know, I don't think we're selling anything, to be honest. This isn't a sales job. We are simply looking for really good young women who are good in softball, who are good at their schoolwork, and trying to find the right fit for Michigan. So we certainly, people know of us. They know of our success. But and I know of their success. But that's just the starting point. There's a lot more to it than that.
Certainly. Do you enjoy being on the recruiting trail?
No, I'm going to tell you that I love to watch softball, and I love to go watch my recruits play. But where recruiting has gone in this day and age, and we're spending a lot of time watching 8th and 9th graders, mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of that. I don't think it's good for that age group. I don't think 8th grade kids should be focusing on their college education. I think they should focus on finishing middle school, and 9th graders the same. It's a bad culture, and it's not good for the coaches who have – our lives are tremendously busy, and we're pulled in so many directions. And when you're recruiting 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, there's not much time to recover from your season and to move forward. So we really are into a situation, I think, all sports. I don't think just in softball. I'm sure basketball and football coaches would say the same. We need to try to make some sense of some of the madness that's going on.
And, Carol, I certainly echo those sentiments. It amazes me whenever I occasionally sit down and log into my laptop and just reading sports news here and there, and I hear about the age of some of these recruits nationally. And again, as you mentioned, they seem to be getting younger and younger. Carol, yep. How have we gotten to this point? How has it gotten this bad?
Well, I would say probably the biggest culprit of all is the social media of it all. It's become the culture because one kid makes this commitment or one coach offers it and it just goes viral. And then everybody thinks it's the norm, and the recruits and their families feel a culture of panic. They're afraid they're going to miss the boat. The coaches fear a culture of panic. They're afraid they're going to miss out on the great prospect. And that's really, it's just become a cycle. It's a cycle, and I don't know where the beginning or the end is, but all parties need to step up to the table and try to make some sense of it. And the NCAA has largely ignored it. And I'd like to see the NCAA recognize that this is one of the biggest issues we have.
Very well said. Carol, before I get you out of here, of course, you mentioned how your squad was runner-up on the stages of, you know, just biggest platform, falling to, of course, Florida. And, you know, just a remarkable ride for your team, though. Remarkable ride last year for your team. But, again, it's a clean slate this year, and the postseason is upon your team. How far can this year's team go? And do you think this team is better than potentially last year's?
Well, the biggest question mark for us and for any team right now is it doesn't matter what you did last year, and it doesn't even matter what you did yesterday. You know, how are you going to handle the stress and the duress of the biggest game of the moment, which is the one you're playing, and to get through those moments? And my team is very talented, and I believe it can go very far. I'm pretty sure Tom Izzo would have said the same thing this past March. And we all know what makes sports so great is that anybody can win. And so the best team doesn't always win. The top-ranked team doesn't always win. It's the beauty of the whole thing. And so we're just looking forward. Our kids have worked hard all year. I think we're coming together nicely as a unit and functioning at a high level. But we're about to be tested. We start the Big Ten tournament and look at the winner of Wisconsin, Indiana, both teams that are playing really well. And to get through that tournament, it's going to take playing good softball in our toughest moment. So, yeah, I think we can do well, and I think anybody can beat us. So I'm going to stay one-pitch focused like I always do.
That's so true. All right, Carol, I got to throw this out there. How much longer do you plan on coaching at Michigan?
Well, this is the good thing is I don't have any plans. I'm going to stay as long as Michigan will have me.
Nice.
And I'm only trying to focus on getting through the Big Ten tournament this week. But, you know, I love what I do. I'm very fortunate, and I work at a great institution. I believe I have one of the best jobs in the world. So as long as Michigan will have me, I'll probably stick around.
Carol, like I always say, when you love what you do, you never work another day in your life, right?
Right, that's right.
There you go. The one, the only, Carol Hutchins, head coach of the Michigan Wolverine softball team. Carol, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and good luck.
All right. Thank you.
All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on today's current sports by chatting a bit about the Real Sports HBO report concerning Eastern Michigan University athletics. And also, we've got a few weekend winners for you. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Let's go to line one right now. We do have a caller on the line. It's our dear friend, Jody, from Canada. Jody, how you doing, my man? How was your Mother's Day weekend?
Oh, it was great, man. We came back to the States for a day and had, you know, went down there, had dinner. But, yeah, I just wanted to do a couple things. First off, I have to give my condolences to the Dick Estelle family.
Yes.
Dick Estelle was important as far as, you know, I listen to him every day. At 8:30, and he also was he's that guy, and I hope he rests in peace. And also, I don't know if you saw Saturday when Dwayne Wade was shooting jump shots while the Canadian anthem was being played.
Yeah, I did, Jody. And you know, I was watching it, and I thought, you know, because Dwayne has this routine where he has to make the final shot before the national anthem starts, and it looked like he was about to, you know, he missed a shot, and it looked like he was about to head back in line, and then he took another shot, and I'm sitting there saying, no, he didn't. That looked really ugly.
Another one.
Yeah, that looked really ugly. Yeah.
Yeah, because it has nothing to do with, you know, the Raptors and the Heat and all that. That's just teaching the respect that should have been implemented from day one in terms of respecting the national anthem and those who fought for the freedoms and all that things. You know, and for a basketball player, and I wrote to him on this sort of thing and said, man, just admit you were wrong. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with your pregame ritual. If the national anthem's playing, I bet if some stuff was happening in that arena, he wouldn't have been shooting no jumpers.
That's very, very true.
Keep it real. You know, I mean, right. You know, if there was something actually going on, it was evacuation, he'd have cooked that ball up and ran.
Oh, it would have been a wrap.
He wouldn't have had to make no jumper. You know
right.
what I mean? So it really, to me, it just seemed to be maybe a lapse in judgment and all that, but just admit it.
Yeah, I haven't seen I guess you can see the aftermath of that moment. So Dwayne hasn't apologized at all? I didn't know that.
Dwayne Wade basically said, if you know me, you know that I was not trying to be disrespectful.
Stop.
I remember him saying a similar thing after coughing after the game 3 of the Dallas-Miami series back in 2011 when he coughed at Dirk Nowitzki's illness and all of that too. Dwayne Wade actually has a little bit of a grocery list when it comes to this stuff.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I've always looked at Dwayne Jody as an upstanding guy and very classy guy. This is the first time I'm hearing of Dwayne having that edgy side to him. I don't know. I just think I don't know. It looked bad. And if something like that happens, again, like you said, Jody, just man up and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, and just keep it moving. I don't know why that's so hard. I don't know why that's so hard.
I mean, you know, the national anthem are playing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Have we really forgot that we're supposed to respect that? Really, what have we become as people? I mean, you might get mad at me for saying it, but, you know, if you're walking in the stadium and the national anthem's played, you're supposed to stop.
Right. I agree,
you know,
man.
If we haven't been teaching that, what the heck are we teaching our kids?
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, let's take it to the real. It's not about your ego or my ego or something. It's about the right things to do. That's like running through red lights. You wage, you don't have to stop at the red light.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. I get it, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like we're asking for much. It's just if it's played, brother, just put the ball down. Hit your shot afterwards. You was hitting enough shots yesterday, Saturday, so it wasn't like it was that important to hit the last one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, just relax, go in line, man, and let the national anthem play. I don't get that. I know there's a lot of Canadians probably ticked off about that.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, I ain't about the Canadian part, but I'm just talking about common,
Yeah, that's just common decency.
I agree. Yeah. Imagine if a foreign player did it during the American anthem. Imagine the outrage that would ensue across the country, national news outlets, not just sports.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere the NBA, I mean, if you letting your players do that, come on, man, I may have to stop watching you, and I've been watching since Wilt.
Yeah.
And Bill Russell.
Yeah, Wade just has to man up and say, hey, I'm sorry, and keep this train moving, dude. Jody, appreciate it.
The league needs to do that. I'll let you go because I know, you're putting the bow on it.
No, you're good. No, thank you, Jody, for that call. I didn't know, and as Jody pointed out, I didn't know that Dwayne Wade just didn't – because I saw it, I'm like, okay, Dwayne Wade will probably apologize about that because that looked pretty bad, but I didn't know he was taking this thing to the grave. I'm like, dude, just – man up and say I'm sorry. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Wade's not one of my favorites.
Wade's not one of my favorites. He's had a few instances I mentioned after the Dirk Nowitzki
game. Small.
That is small compared to this.
Petty. Compared to what other cats I've seen doing the NBA.
But at the same time, but this is Rajon Rondo, too. You can rewind the track back to that, and he actually separated Rajon Rondo's shoulder during a little bit of a scuffle. So Dwayne Wade, I'm not the biggest Wade fan. He's got his fair share of dirty plays in his career.
I wouldn't call him dirty.
Oh, I would. I'll show you a video.
Isaac, stop. After, now you're going way too far.
Dwayne Wade is not a dirty player. Do you remember the push on Rip Hamilton? Dirk Nowitzki,
those few instances do
Rajon
not,
Rondo.
He's not Matthew Dellavedova here, okay?
Yes, he is. He's
stop
worse.
It, Isaac.
He's got more of a record.
You know
Look
what?
Up
this
tape.
Would this would come up with 2 minutes left in the show. I'm not even gonna go there. Thank you, Jody, for the call. We'll table that for tomorrow, Isaac. Let's hit our customary segment here on Monday's show. We look at the weekend that was and bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in the world of sports and beyond. Weekend winners. Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, right now I want to show some love, Isaac, to the Michigan State softball program as well, not just the Michigan softball program, even though they won, again, ninth straight Big Ten regular season championship. The MSU softball team, they have qualified for the Big Ten tournament, which will take place this week. Also, the Michigan women's golf team is in the NCAAs, which is pretty cool. And also, the Michigan State baseball team, the rubber match against Nebraska. Right now, Nebraska, though, have a 3-1 lead in the bottom of the third. Isaac?
Yeah, I've got to go just, I guess, with Bryce Harper. 7 at-bats, no official at-bats, no hits or strikeouts or anything for the first time in MLB history, although the team lost the game.
Impressive stuff. All right, we'll be back at it again. Special thanks to Carol Hutchins. We'll be back at it tomorrow, same time, same place. Take care and be easy, people.